On this episode, we discuss the Pope's Exorcist.
It's kind of like if you were to cross Evil Dead with Columbo.
Everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
It's Elliot Kalen. Sorry, I was riding a unicycle down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, a couple of crusties in here.
That makes sense. You shouldn't do that on mic, but that's okay.
Hey, guys, good to see you again. This is a podcast, in case you didn't know.
Oh, cool.
Where we watch
just
bad
for the
movie.
Record, we can't see you. If it's the listeners you're talking to, we actually can't see them, so don't worry.
Except for you, Gary. I'm looking at you right now. Somewhere, guys, Gary's so freaked out right now.
Yeah, he's freaked
out. Yeah, you
out.
Really gave him the business. So what do we do on this podcast other than spy on Gary?
This is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. Or a movie that maybe, look, no judgments until the end. Mm-hmm. It could be
who knows good. If it's a thumbs up for me, dog, yeah. Other than me.
But we've heard things.
Why would you rub it into that dog's face, Stu, that you have thumbs and he doesn't?
Yeah. Well, he knows what he did.
We heard some things, usually about the movies that we chose, that suggest that maybe a humorous dissection of these films would be enjoyable for you, the audience.
Was it the aggressive Twitter campaign that Russell Crowe personally was doing of posting pictures of his character Father Gabriel Amorth riding a fucking Vespa?
I don't know if it
was
Russell Crowe himself, but certainly all of the people who sent us that trailer to the film The Pope's Exorcist saying, you guys are doing this, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of fan excitement about the Pope's Exorcist. Yeah,
we got off our fucking asses and we went, we took our lazy butts to the theater.
And then got on them again.
It was really fun because Dan and I are like, okay, we got to go see this fucking movie. Our usual places to go is like the Alamo Draft House.
Because usually we don't go see movies in the theater.
But like for personal use, we usually go to the Alamo Draft House because we like to get fucked up in the movies.
This movie is only for public use. Please be careful. Be clean with it. Wipe it down when you're done.
Well, like normally we like to get a little bit twisted on a couple of cocktails. We're bad boys. I was looking, and the only draft house it was playing in New York was Staten Island. So, hell yeah, we got to see a turkey on the road.
We did see a big, fat turkey on the road while we were driving.
As I mentioned on a previous mini, I was super bummed that the menu wasn't all gabagool and spaghetti. But that's fine. I can live. Also, because of the subject matter of the movie, you know. Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of Italians in the movie.
So we
still thinking about that turkey we saw.
It was huge. It was a fucking big boy.
Big turkey. And it fluffed itself up at the traffic as we drove by.
He saw Dan clocking him, and he's like, keep on moving, buddy.
See, on the East Coast, there's a turkey in the road. On the West Coast, there's a peacock in the road.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
The difference between
NBC
New York and L.A.
on tough times. So we headed over there, and we fired up the movie, and you know what?
I don't think we fired it up, because, again, we saw it in the theater. Meanwhile,
I was not a part of this Staten Island road trip, which is the saddest. To go from Brooklyn to Staten Island is not the most exciting road trip in the world. But
you would have loved it.
I got to do something I almost never get to do these days, which I was so excited to, which is go to a sleepy movie theater that has more staff than attendees at the moment and sit in the middle of the day and watch a movie with three old people the same three old people that I think are always when I see horror movies in the middle of the day.
Yes. Yeah, I love that. That's the best feeling. That was like when I would skip school in high school. That's my crew.
you make fun of it as a road trip, and rightly so. I'm not saying that you shouldn't.
You didn't even leave the city you were in.
Psychologically, it did have an effect. Like it was like, oh, Stuart's picking me up in the car, and we're like driving to see a movie someplace else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. It was
old times.
So the movie begins,
and you drove right onto the ferry, and then
that's how we did it.
Yeah. So the movie begins in a flashback. Doesn't the movie begin with a quote? Sorry, I didn't take particularly good notes because I was in a movie theater.
Yeah.
So the movie begins with a quote from our main character, Father Gabriel Amorth.
They're quoting a real person who's played by Russell Crowe in a fictional movie.
I was shocked to learn that at the very end. That was the biggest twist of the movie at the end.
Based on the books by.
Yeah. I was like, this was purported to actually happen, this thing it's that pretty this cool. movie has shown
He's
me.
He's like, wow, there was a CGI portal in real life. And now, of course, I think this name's cool because it sounds like the band Amon Amarth, Viking metal band, but that has no impact in the movie itself. So we get a quote from him talking about like the devil being excited when we don't pay enough attention or something.
When we don't believe in him, the devil gets excited because that means he can wreck his mischief unchecked.
Which we're pretty aware of the devil the whole movie, so it's pretty.
Everyone
keeps
talking about
it.
There is that one moment we'll get to where the youngest cardinal in the history of the church, I guess, he's like the what's his name? That horrible young man in the Trump administration.
Little
lizard
something.
Guy. Yeah,
he's like, the one who looked like Mr. Burns, but Mr. Burns had been de-aged, but not enough. It's like him in the Vatican is like. People are tired of demons. The church needs to be more relevant. And I thought it's just such a fake, we'll get to it. It's such a fake conflict for the head exorcist of the Vatican to have to overcome, partly because it's the church. Like, it's not supposed to be like new and cool, you know, but also the Pope played by Franco Nero,
which was great.
So has the exorcist's back that it's like, are we really supposed to think he's going to lose his job because this young cardinal doesn't like him?
Him. Give us your fucking badge and gun. And he's like, I don't think so.
Before we get to that scene, first, Father Gabriel, he's got his James Bond first mission of the movie prologue to deal with, right?
Like cold open. It's set in the 80s. He goes to a little village where there's a little boy who's possessed.
Well, he's like a grown man. They keep calling him a boy, but he's at least a teenager. He has a beard. Yeah.
So the first line of the movie is Russell Crowe complimenting a pig by telling it it's beautiful, and I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, well,
what he does to the pig
after
is the
least he could do. He doesn't considering. Do
I mean, outside the pilot of Black Mirror, this is just about the worst thing I've seen done to a pig in a TV show or movie.
So he calms everybody down. He talks to the possessed guy. Possessed guy, obviously a demon, is doing demon stuff. And Russell Crowe does a little bit of banter. He tells some jokes, and he basically tricks the demon into proving that it's powerful by possessing a pig instead of the leaving the boy's body and going into a pig. In which case, as soon as the pig gets possessed, they blow its head off.
Yeah. The farmer who brought the pig in just blows the pig's head off.
I got a couple of questions. Well, I mean,
if your question is, was that boy kid really possessed?
Well, the answer is no. Well. Yes, I wanted to get into that.
Yeah, they didn't call up the devil and say, like, devil, are you free on this day to possess our actor?
What's your day rate?
Well, you really should go through my reps. I haven't talked to them much lately, but they'll be excited that I'm getting some work.
Wow, Kevin Spacey doing a new accent.
No, I wanted to get into it because, you know, Stuart's telling the story as if he was possessed, but the movie then has Russell Crowe being like, oh, that kid, you know, like he had psychological problems. He just needed a little theater.
Yes.
So he doesn't think he's possessed anymore. Now, I've got a couple of issues with this. Number one, the kid had all sorts of like, I'm possessed makeup on. So if he wasn't really possessed, he still needs like a doctor, not just
but he hasn't eaten in days. They've said he's been in this kind of state for days. And you see Russell Crowe do a series of tests on him. And we don't know, but we find out later when he does those same tests on the really possessed character that he is ascertaining from that there is no demon inside him. He has that magic charm that he waves in front of his eyes and the guy doesn't get demon eyes. And the real sad part is that pig still has to die even though there was no demon in there. Like, he just...
Yeah. That's another question of mine. Like, if it were real, would
you think
that
maybe
kill
it was a stunt pig that had a fake pig that they blew off?
If that were real, would it kill the demon? Like, is the demon attached
to
that
pig? This is an issue I've always had. I have the same issue with The Exorcist, too, where the demon possesses a body, and then the body kills itself. The demon should just be able to hop into another body. Like, it shouldn't mm-hmm. really hurt the demon that badly. But it always seems, but when the, it's all these movies, when the spirit hops into the right body and then that body gets killed, then the demon is defeated.
So real quick, guys. So by calling your movie The Pope's Exorcist, is that like one-upping The Exorcist? Like, it's a little bit better?
Is this
the next step up, like the universe's Exorcist?
Pope's guy.
Well, and what I want is the sequel where he has been fired, and it's called The Ex-Exorcist, and he's got to figure out what his next step is.
I want to talk about the title, The Pope's Exorcist, but I do want to get back to this just briefly.
The title also implies that the Pope has been possessed.
Stepping on the thing I wanted to get
back to. So let's say it now. Why not just say it now,
Dan? Well, because I don't want to get too far away from like what we were talking about.
Okay,
before
so let's
down
put a
whole
pin
nother...
in that. Let's put a pin in misperceptions about the title, and we'll just go back into the movie. I'm sorry that I stole that from your mind, Dan, much as in the last episode, an idea was stolen from the mind of Stephen King.
I feel like this stuff about like, oh, you know, like the kid only had a mental issue. Like, we need to, like, most of the time I don't actually need to exercise things. Like, this is like stuff that the filmmaker is putting in to be like, you know, this is a modern, like, this, the Pope's exorcist, even though he's an exorcist, let's be clear, he is a modern, reasonable man who recognizes that for the most part, exorcism is not a thing that needs to happen.
Well, I don't know.
Except for this one tiny bit. Well, hold on. Let me say my thing before you jump in. You don't know what I'm... It's just like in real life, this guy, he's like the quote-unquote real life of this exorcist. Like, he wrote these books about, man, I exorcised like hundreds of thousands of demons. And so I feel like the fact that this exists in the movie is here to be like, hey man, we all want to sympathize with like a guy who knows that this is nutty, right? Okay.
I think I'm not quite sure I agree with that. I think what it's in there for is more, to me at least, what it was saying was this guy is a professional. Like, he knows what he's doing. He can tell the difference between a real demon and a fake demon. He has that secret knowledge that a professional needs to have. And maybe there is a little bit of, I mean, he's also constantly drinking. And I don't know if the real exorcist was like taking shots of whiskey from a flask. Well, not even shots. He just pours it down as if he's drinking lemonade out of a flask. I don't know if that was – if he was really doing that. And those moments where I was like –
he's drinking like he's shooting a fucking commercial for it.
Yeah, he's like turning into James Woods from Vampires, where they're like the hard-living, you know, vampire killers from the Vatican. But I think that was partly there because it's them showing us that he knows what he's doing and he's not going to get fooled. You know, he's a pro. He knows the tricks, you know.
Yeah, no, I know, but I guess I chafe against like the fact that this is purported to be, obviously it's not based on reality. Like it's like,
of course, because demons don't exist. We can whatever just say they it. Did, I think we're fine.
No, I know. It's like whatever they did, whatever the original books are like, I'm sure that this is like a measure of madness even further beyond it. But the fact that this movie tries to be like, no, guys, this is a reasonable exorcist who's a pro. Like, I guess I chafe on that just like, and they're like, look, let me, don't try and hornswoggle me. Like, I don't believe in demons, but I'm watching a horror movie, so I'm going to go with you. Stop trying to like.
You're saying you would rather he was like a straight out and out, like fire and brimstone kind of, you know. Oh,
I don't know. I don't know
demon.
If I would rather that. I really like the way that this character is personified by Russell Crowe.
Because
we'll
I feel like, then you start getting into the more worrying issue to me is if it's like, your son, you think he's possessed? Yes, he's possessed by the devil. Does he have sex with other men? Because that's one of the big symptoms. And that's not a character I want to sympathize with at all. Like, I do want him to be a little modern where he's like, well, of course I believe in primordial forces of good and evil, but like, come on, let's all agree. There's some of this stuff is a little old-fashioned.
I guess it is just sort of a general, like, dislike of this idea of like, I don't know. Like, I'm letting too much of the real world
I gotta say, I thought this opening scene was pretty fun. I liked it.
I thought to me, this was like it's like the library scene in the Ghostbusters, where you get a sense of like you get a sense of how good this person is at their job. In Ghostbusters, you're learning that they're terrible at it. they're there to find a ghost, and when they do find it, they run away screaming. Mm-hmm. But in here, you get a sense that like, oh, he knows what he's doing. Like he can handle this exorcist can handle any situation, or can he? Because the movie's about to throw a challenge in his face.
I mean, I look. in the context of a movie, I liked it. I'm just like, let's not pretend there are good exorcists and bad exorcists.
Yeah, they're all bad. Like,
it's so, just dumb stuff.
But what about Sexorcist, Dan? How do you feel about them? Are they good or bad?
That's a White Zombie album? I can't remember. So flash forward a little bit. It's still the 80s. We're in Spain. Cue up She Sells Sanctuary by The Cult. It's like, mm-hmm. Hell yeah, this is a fucking rocking movie. We are introduced to a family who are moving into a Spanish abbey that they've inherited from their recently deceased father. It is the mother, her daughter, like teenage daughter, and her young son, who already looks kind of creepy. Like, yes. This kid is the number one special effect in this movie.
Well, I don't want to make fun of this kid's look, but, and he has refused to talk since witnessing the death of their father. But they basically, the movie makers are giving us.
I'm not making fun of him. I'm saying it's like fucking Doug Jones, dude. Like, he's amazing. This kid's got a big career ahead of him. He looks awesome.
The kid is really good, but it's your standard Spielberg's assortment of single mom, older kid, younger kid, and the younger kid gets involved in some kind of fantastical thing. That's your basic family. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Spielberg, I believe, took it from the diary of Father Gabriel Morris, actually.
Originally E.T. was called
due, yeah.
E.T. was Exorcist Terrestrial. And over time they took all the exorcism stuff.
Yeah. That's a shame. Skittles. Demons love them. Reese's Pieces.
Oh, Reese's Pieces. No, Stewart. Oh,
I fucked up that joke. I fucked it up.
And guys, but you're right. Demons do love Skittles because they want to taste the rainbow.
Well, that's the thing. Like, aliens love Reese's Pieces. Demons love Skittles.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, guys. You're making me feel so much better. Mm-hmm. I feel like such an asshole.
I mean, I know that Elliot believes that because they're all fruit flavored. And to him... Fruit is the demon's
fruit is evil. I mean, what was the original sin that cast Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden? It wasn't eating meat.
It all tracks.
It wasn't eating chocolate. It was eating fruit.
No, you're right. And it was eating Skittles.
God said, thou tree is the rainbow, and thou shalt not taste the rainbow. And the serpent came up and was like, Eve, you want to taste that rainbow. You know you
do. That'd be a wild-ass Skittles commercial, by the way.
You know what?
This is the Skittles commercial.
I think it would work.
This is the Skittles commercial. God says, it's almost all told without dialogue. God points at the tree to Adam and Eve and wagging his finger. No, no, don't do that. And then they look at it and the snake nods his head and then they eat it. And the next shot is them walking out, being cast out with handfuls of Skittles. And Adam just turns to Eve with his mouth full of Skittles and goes, worth it. And then it says, Skittles, taste the rainbow. Done.
Oh, see, man. TM that shit. TM it. We did it.
That's a better version. I was envisioning sort of like a very 90s version of the commercial where it's all like sort of like cut out, brightly colored like animation. Like it looks like a trapper keeper. There's like a no, where like God is like the parents telling the kid that they can't have the delicious treat. And then like there's like a cool snake with like sunglasses.
Yeah.
And then they taste the rainbow and then there's like a guitar riff.
Yeah,
and
triangles
like,
everywhere. Yeah,
no,
sure.
That's cool. And Adam and Eve are like totally naked. Like you see a dong just flapping around.
Oh, yeah,
it's
full frontal.
Just like in 90s commercials.
Yeah, just like in the 90s when all those commercials for candy had full frontal
nudity. It's going to push the envelope a little bit, but I feel like that would play in Europe.
We all remember the famous campaign, give me a break, give me a break, break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar on your dick.
it's a wild
and the
one.
Guy, and then the guy would take it and he would slap it against his erect penis and it would snap into pieces. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That man, Blade. So the family has just inherited this like crumbling abbey that is like moss and ivy choked, a perfect location for a Ravenloft D&D adventure. There are tradesmen that are trying to fix it up, but they keep having problems.
Tradesmen, contractors. Like, I love calling them tradesmen, though. There's a blacksmith, there's a cooper, there's a Fletcher.
Yeah, a barrel wright. So they're fixing up, but they're having some issues. The son has not spoken since his father's untimely passing. And the teenage daughter is kind of a rebel. She smokes cigarettes and wears revealing clothing. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, this is around when the teenage daughter puts on her headset on her Walkman and is listening to "We Care a Lot" by Faith No More, which cuts to Father Gabriel Morth riding his Vespa around the streets of Rome. It's amazing.
Let me say this: Russell Crowe is loving being in this movie. I feel like he is enjoying every frame that he is on screen. Yeah.
Well, he's gobbling it. He's gobbling every ounce of this screen.
And part of the thing that makes this movie a lot of fun, honestly, to me at least, like it feels like the most sort of, it feels like very like early 2000s, like horror movie complete with like later on there's like a CGI like puddle of fire and stuff that like but in the middle of it you have Russell Crowe like giving this genuinely kind of great performance where it's like he is imbuing it both with like a certain gravitas and realism and he is slicing ham all over the scene.
I say this not just because he has a beard and is clearly overweight in the movie, but there's a I felt like there's a real like Orson Welles-y feeling to it.
I said that
Dan
later
turned
on
and told me during the movie.
Well, like there's that scene where he's on his Vespa and he has like his long black like robes on and he has like sunglasses and a black hat and he looks for all the world like Orson Welles riding a Vespa so around. Awesome.
Yeah, all he needs is a big cigar in his mouth and like a
scarf. If this movie had been called Orson Welles: The Pope's Exorcist, I'd have been into it too.
You wouldn't have had to change a single thing about it because I would not believe Orson Welles going around doing this made up weird Italian accent.
Or if it was The Pope's Exorcist and then in ellipses, Orson Welles. They don't do that in movie titles that often these days,
not
but
often.
I feel like it would work in this case. So he is going up in front of a like a tribunal, a jury, do you call it, a council?
I think a tribunal is a good way to put it. It's a group of cardinals, one of whom is a friend of his that is clearly on his side. But they're all humphing and harumphing about the very existence of the Pope's exorcist opposition, which is
they want his really badge and gun, basically.
But it's not really for anything he's done. It's just for the idea of it.
Well, they do bring up that there was one exorcism that went bad, and
that's true.
Himself.
And also, he does write articles about it, which I've got to assume that's some kind of conflict of interest that he likes.
And books.
And he does this work for the Vatican, and then just writes tell all the books. You read the books. The books are good. And but it's all run by this real Weasley, you know, young cardinal who
American cardinal,
and he's just, and part of me is like, how did he get the seniority to be on this council? But then again, like I said, in the Trump administration, it was all these young evil people who like had no business being in a government position. But
that's also like the not so subtext of it is just like this is the new young buck. You know, and like you like bringing in like new reforms to the church, and like
he's not a cool young Russell, pope like the Jude Law young pope.
Yeah. Russell Crowe and the pope
fucks
know that like evil exists, and like you need him on that wall. Like the thing is, like the thing. I mean, we've alluded to it before. Like Stuart said, this is like a badge and gun thing, but like this, like the movie is The Exorcist plus a buddy cop movie. Like,
yes, really, very like, much so. Yes. Uh-huh.
Russell Crowe's essentially the grizzled old veteran cop who plays by his own rules.
Who plays by his own rules and is going to show the young cop. I mean, the young cop is not necessarily a straight arrow so much as he's kind of like naive and new, the young priest. Yeah. This is one of those movies where a new person is coming in and saying, your old ways of doing things are bad. And he goes, I'm going to show you why they're not, why you need me. You need me on that soul. You need me on that soul, keeping shooting people and stuff like that.
So things are looking a little bit grim for Father Amorth. But then while praying, he gets some time to spend with his boss. That's right, the Pope, played by Franco Nero.
Franco Nero.
Who's like, the Pope is so funny in this to me.
Yes, it is the whole time that every scene with him. And at first I was like, I know who this is. And it took me a while to recognize that it was Franco Nero. Cause I wasn't getting good looks at those blazing blue eyes, but he is a hilarious Pope of this. It is the entire time I was like, I do not believe this guy is the Pope at all. And he spends his whole day in a church either sitting in a pew or kneeling. And I'm like, so the Pope just works out of a church? Like he doesn't have an office or like a house?
I expected him at any moment to be like, Father Amortha, you need this special crossbow that shoots lasers.
if this Pope had shown up at the exorcism site and then pulled two guns out of his robes and started firing, I would not have been surprised.
He does come very close to being like Russell Crowe's Q character because like they keep cutting back to him like looking through the old books.
Yeah, that's true.
And when things go bad for him, even though they are separated by multiple countries, he's like, no, Gabriel.
Yeah, they do seem to have some kind of force level psychic link. I guess that's the connection you get when you're part of the Catholic family. You know, you're all part of one soul, and you're all in the brotherhood of Jesus or something like that, right?
Yeah, something like that. So meanwhile,
I'm not a Christian. We're Jews. We do it our own way. We're all independent free agents, just living it up. Anyway, continue.
Meanwhile, back in Spain, the young son finds a hole in the wall in the basement, and he looks at a door that has a crack in it, and something happens. Then shortly afterwards, these aforementioned contractors are downstairs. They try to get a better look at this hole in the wall. They light a flare, which explodes and burns them. The contractors are having none of this. They leave the job site. They walk off. I wonder if they had a good contract with them. We'll find out later. I mean, that all gets sorted out later.
It's in the postscripts, I'm sure. Yeah, in the I don't know if you stayed for the mid-credit scene with them and their lawyers dealing with enforcing the contract. Yeah, yeah.
The son almost immediately starts doing possessed person stuff. His mom shows up and he's like, mommy, you're all going to hell. And then he grabs his mom's breast. He talks about breastfeeding. It was pretty intense, actually.
That's the most intense part. That's the only part where it felt like it started getting into the territory that The Exorcist gets into, where it's like, oh, this is genuinely upsetting to see a kid doing these things. Because most of it is him just going like, you're all going to die, Gabe.
Let's take a moment, because it's been invoked a couple times. Let's just briefly talk about The Exorcist. In that there's nothing that this demon does that you have not already seen in The Exorcist. It's very specifically like all of The Exorcist stuff, whether it's turning someone's head around having writing come up on the belly or walking around like a spider.
When it takes over the daughter's mind and she drops to the ground like a spider, I was like, movie, come on. Like, you know, I've seen this before.
I know. Like, I both agree with you, and I felt like it was kind of hilarious how close it hewed towards like the writers, like they looked up like, well, I guess this is our monster manual of what demons
this
do.
This is what demons do. Well, it does feel
they didn't want the nerds on the internet to be like, oh, those aren't powers demons have.
Well, no, but it feels that happens sometimes where like a movie, it's like with like the Wolfman invented all the stuff about like Wolf's Bane and things like that. It's all made up. And then later werewolf movies were like, that's what I mean, as in it's not real traditional folklore or something like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, werewolves are also made, like, as opposed to the real werewolf stuff, lock your doors, everybody. But people were like, I guess that's just part of being a werewolf. Or like, there's vampire stuff that happens with, where like, it'll get invented in a story and people just assume. But it is very funny that they're like, oh, The Exorcist must be also supposedly based on fact, so we'll just do all that stuff.
Yep.
But it's also as if they saw The Exorcist and they were like, why does it have to have such a downer ending? Why couldn't The Exorcist end with Father Karras and the other priest raring to go for more adventures and more escapades?
I mean, I like walking out of the theater with a little bit of a high. So the possessed child says, bring me the priest. So, of course, they bring in the local priest.
Very understandably.
Who immediately gets demolished, and they're like, we're going to have to call in a bigger
it's
gun.
It's like such a gag.
He goes, wrong priest. I meant Christopher Priest, the comic book writer, not the author of The Prestige. That's a different writer named Christopher Priest.
Oh, interesting. Cool.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I was actually confused for a second, so thank you for clarifying.
There are two different writers. One of them, his birth name, I believe, is Christopher Priest. The other, the comic writer, that was not his birth name. He took it on later. But anyway, great comic writer, though. Great writer.
This is... like gag editing where like the priest is like, don't worry, like it'll be fine. He walks in and he immediately is blasted through the door, which is also funny because later on, like, I don't know, the demon doesn't seem to be as powerful later. It can't just blast everyone around.
This is one of my issues that I have
for the sake of a joke.
With Exorcist movies, the power levels of the demons always seem to fluctuate based on what the movie wants. And it's always like, this demon is so strong. I'm saying Jesus Christ's name and it's not stopping him until the end of the movie when it's important to stop the demon, and then a prayer usually kind of pushes the demon away. And it's something I never can quite understand the rules of. Is it that you have to say the prayers louder or you have to say them more intensely?
Like, I think it's a power of belief thing. So clearly, like, obviously this priest is no Russell Crowe, but it still is, I don't know. I have the same problem you do.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Sorry, I'm just looking at the stats of this demon. Yeah, he's really tough. Technically, he's a devil, actually. Let me correct myself.
Is Asmodeus in the Monster Manual?
Asmodeus. Okay. Yeah,
I mean, Asmodeus
is the Prince of Beator, yeah.
He is a famous old demon. Also, of course, the evil snake from Redwall, but that's, you know, not the same character.
Armor class 30.
Oh, wow. Well, dang. That explains.
Good now, fucking luck, dude.
How many experience points you get for taking him down?
Oh, to check. That's a lot, though. I'm trying to find his challenge rating real quick.
I mean, yeah. That's the thing. Russell Crowe was out there grinding with all of these fake demons just to build up his powers, and then he...
Yeah, that's what he had to get up his levels, yeah. So, because this is also... what's going on behind...
155,000 XP.
Wow.
Take that to the bank.
Yeah, to the experience bank. My older son just got the Monster Manual as a gift recently, and so he's just walking around quizzing me on the experience points and armor classes of monsters I've never heard of. And
that it's like, was...
Yeah, I don't know. Just tell me.
That was also my relationship to the Monster Manual. Like, I didn't want to play Dungeons & Dragons as a kid. Like, I didn't have friends who did it, but I also, it sounded like it was going to be boring to me. But I loved reading the Monster Manual.
Sure, yeah. Just pictures of monsters and their stats and stuff. Anyway, so this demon, he's just doing normal demon stuff. He calls for the other priest. I don't know how they make the connection to go all the way that they're just like, let's just go to the top of the organization. Let's just get the Pope's exorcist.
Well, the next scene is like the Pope being like,
he's like, there's a situation in Spain. I think it's a very dangerous.
I have a very special demon for you. It's tonight, pretty great. You're going to like it.
You're going to like it. It's good. We don't always have this demon. It's going to be real nice.
I was really happy with all these interactions.
And we get to see the secret Vatican library where all the librarians wear black robes with the hoods over their heads, which makes it harder to read.
Dope.
It looks amazing. I thought it was so
cool. It looks so cool. So, of course, Father Amorth gets... dispatched. He drives the whole way on his Vespa. Seems like quite a trip, but you know, he's the man.
From Italy to Spain.
Yeah, that does seem like a lot of Vespa.
It's a lot.
Also, let's step aside. This is a possessed boy who's causing trouble. People have died in an explosion. It's going to take him a long time to ride a Vespa from Italy to Spain. He's got to stop to eat fuel.
It's mostly just, you know, for zipping around in Rome from what
that's the thing.
You know what would have been even better is if he flew there, but he's riding the Vespa up and down the aisle of the plane the entire flight.
Yep. Making friends with everyone, because that's what he does.
Calling the attendant. I'm trying to sleep. And this gentleman.
I mean, that's a short flight. You don't. If you're going to sleep on that flight, that's wild.
You must be so tired.
Yeah. So he arrives.
They're not even serving a meal on that flight. Yeah.
He arrives at the Abbey. He investigates a little bit. Like, there's a courtyard with a mysterious well with a seal over it. He drinks some whiskey. He wanders around. He meets the family.
Yeah. This is the point and click part of the adventure. Yeah,
the mom is very quick to accept that this could be an exorcist situation and that. Uh-huh. He knows, it, like, there's this is the weird thing, Dan, where you're saying, like,
it was a popular movie, Elliot.
That's true. Yeah. It wasn't that old when this came out. That they set up, like, he's an exorcist of the modern world, but everyone else in the movie seems to have no trouble being convinced that there's a demon on the loose inside a boy's body. And it felt like I just wanted a little bit more pushback from, I mean, they do take the boy, I guess, to a doctor who's like, everything seems fine, but the MRI caught a demon in his body or something.
Yeah, the MRI. Oh, man, that would be great if there's, like, a demon face in the MRI.
This dark spot right there, let me turn it to the side. Ah, a demon face. Yeah, that's Asmodeus. Uh-huh. That'll happen. All the symptoms are
lining up with
Asmodeus.
Whoa, he's like flicking me off. He's holding 2 6 guns and he's pointing them at me.
get him
inside. He's badass.
This demon in here that seems to be trying to sell me some deviled ham.
my son did swallow a can of red devil paint. That might be why that's in there.
He's holding up some hot sauce.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's the kind of demon you want. They're not as much trouble. He's got a goatee and like a nose ring, and he's really into like ska music and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you don't have that kind of demon, unfortunately. This is the kind that wants to sell you ham. That's the kind you don't want. Yeah.
You want a demon like Coop would draw. So, yeah, let's see. So, he meets the possessed boy, and this is where things get a little bit different, guys, because we had already seen him, we'd already seen his exorcism style before, and it was pretty potent, but the demon seems to kind of resist all of his efforts, even though when he flashes this medallion in the demon's face, we see it's his eye, his pupils separate to demon pupils and normal pupils. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool.
That's a cool effect.
That's a good medallion too. Like, can you get those at the Vatican gift shop, or are they
probably?
It's a claw machine game. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You have to be good at it. Like,
that's the thing.
It's a game of skill.
I see.
They can't just let everybody have those. You got to prove that God has chosen you by winning the claw machine.
Unless you pay for Vatican Blue, in which case you get it for free.
Yeah, right. But who's gonna do that? Who's gonna? You look like such an asshole
what
when you pay for Vatican
is
Blue.
Do it, right?
The thing is, when you don't want Vatican Blue, but they give it to you anyway, and you're like, I don't want people to think that I paid for this. No, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, why must I be punished for having so many followers?
Yeah. No, but that's also how you become Pope, is that you use the claw machine and you get the medallion with a P on it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That makes sense, actually. That makes a lot of sense.
With the P on it? I don't want the medallion with P on it.
Dan, Dan, you knew not to go there, and you went there anyway. You knew what I meant. You were very clear on it. I am shutting down this improv right now, you little stinker.
So, Father Morth is like, there's something up here. This is a for realsies
exorcism. There's a something up in this boy. It seems like it might be a demon.
So he brings the local priest in as well. They kind of hang around and we kind of get to know all the characters a little bit.
Kick back with some brews.
Yeah.
I mean, the Father Morth is kicking back with booze. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So he then
he's like the three ninjas in that he's kicking back.
So this is where things get a little fuzzy, because this is like the midpoint of the movie. So this is where we get a little bit of scares. We get
some scares. And also the demon is talking about how their sins will find them out. And that can be that ends up meaning both personally and culturally. And Father Mort, he's getting flashbacks to his service as a partisan in World War II, fighting the Nazis in Italy. Uh-huh. And it turns out his sin was essentially not dying during the war.
But it's also tied in with, there's also like, it's mixed in with his sin of failing the young woman.
Yes.
What, like Rosalind? Or
yeah. There's a possessed young woman who he didn't take seriously as a case, right? Well, and she ended up jumping off of a bell tower right in front of him.
That's the, so look. I mean, like, I guess that, you know, like, these are the, like, this is obviously something that would haunt you as a person if you felt like you didn't, someone died because you didn't take them seriously enough. But it is one of these movie sins where it's like, well, it's not really, like, they don't want him to actually have done much of anything. So, like, his sin, I guess, is, like, he said she didn't need an exorcism, but then didn't, like, refer her to psychiatric help.
It's more like a sin of not doing enough rather than sin of actually doing something wrong. And even the younger priest, his sin is that he had there was a woman he was in love with, and he wouldn't leave the priesthood for her. And so did she also take her own life? Is that what happened? She died somehow.
I missed that. I think I was peeing during that sequence.
She died in such a way that it's impossible for her ghost to wear a top, unfortunately. And so you're right that the sins they have are fairly minimal compared to the sins of the Catholic Church.
Yeah,
which
were you expecting his sin to be like, I was drinking and I like ran over a guy didn't tell anyone. Like,
I hit him with my Vespa and then I just buried him and he was still alive. His hand was reaching up to the dirt, but I just kept piling it on until he couldn't get out. He goes, look, I'm the Pope's exorcist. You know, this is going to be all over the tabloids. I'm a famous writer. Like, I can't let this happen.
Great.
And then the guy who's getting buried is choking. Looking on the dirt and going like, the Pope's exorcist, the Pope needs to be exorcised because there's a demon inside.
And Father Morth was like, you're misunderstanding. That's not actually what I do. I don't exorcise the Pope, although, you know, he could use a little exercise. You don't get a lot. He mostly just kneels and sits. He doesn't move around a lot.
I like that you've turned into Chico Marx. Right?
The thing is,
he's burying this guy alive. And he's thinking to himself, this is no good, boss. This is no good, boss.
The thing is, these bits are kind of like Russell Crowe's mumbling the whole time.
Yeah.
It's true. He is kind of... It is Orson Welles as Chico Marx as the Pope's exorcist, yeah.
Well, our friends on on Blake Check have what they call putters and murmurs performances. And Griffin, at one point, like, Stewart invited him to come along on this thing, but he had other
stuff. Yeah, because I was like, who do I know who would like to road trip to Staten Island to go see the Pope's Exorcist with us?
But I texted him afterwards. I'm like, man, you missed some puttering and some murmuring, because like, that's what this is. Yeah, like, but... And then so, later growling when he gets possessed.
But, yeah, he really throws himself into the possession part, which is, and I'm like, this was the insider, and he's not above doing this stuff.
Yeah, speaking of deviled ham.
And so, now, I'm gonna skip ahead slightly just to say that we eventually found out that this is all part of it. It's the demon Asmodeus, and the real sin that is being exorcised, is the Spanish Inquisition, which the movie lays at the feet of demons that took over priests and made them do all those bad things.
Explains
and
it.
That was the part in the movie where I was like, movie, that's a step too far. Like, I'm sorry. This is a step too far in kind of like in sin washing the Catholic Church, where they're like, all that bad stuff we've done for 1,000 years, that wasn't us. There was a demon inside of us. But it does mean we get to see a bunch of cool skeletons. So that was okay.
We do get to see cool skeletons. So we get another like exorcism sequence that doesn't go well. The same stuff where like the demon is playing on both their minds. At one point, so the important thing is that Father Amorth needs to learn the demon's true name, because that's going to give him power over it, allowing the exorcism to be completed.
Yes.
But we don't know that. The demon won't give up that information.
Much like knowing the true name of comic book writer Christopher Priest gives me power over him, should I ever meet him.
So Father Amorth is like, he knows something's up with this abbey. He goes back to the well that has the seal of the Vatican on it, and he pulls the lid off of the well, and he finds a bunch of cool skulls. Mm-hmm. It's very Resident Evil. And he's like, oh, okay, so this was like Spanish Inquisition stuff. And these were people who wouldn't submit or convert
The Spanish Inquisition, for anyone who's listening who's not familiar, is the Catholic Church decided that they were not so happy about other people not being Catholic and killed them. Or torture them into converting. It was pretty bad. Luckily, as the movie tells us, it was just demons that did that. So everyone was
just
cool.
Just demons. Yeah. So they go down into the basement. They're like, there's still something up. So the two priests go down into the basement, and they find the hole in the wall, and they find the door, and they push the door down. And inside is a really cool chamber that's like totally something out of Dark Souls, that has a bunch of like skeletons. And in the middle of the room, there's like this cage with another skeleton.
And let's not forget there's built-in bookcases. And I'm
that's nice.
Those are great built-ins. Why would you hide them behind that door? Like, take advantage of it. Yeah.
And they need to get through another door. And the only way they can do that is they need to find the key, which in perfect Resident Evil logic means they have to dig through a corpse's tummy to find it.
Here's the thing that... Oh, sorry. What were you going to say, Stu?
I was going to say, so it turns out that the corpse was an exorcist or an inquisitor. I don't know which one.
He was like the last line of defense to keep this demon inside this wall. He was a priest of some kind or a cardinal or something. Here's the thing. I love a scene in a movie where someone has to dig through a gross thing to get the thing that they need. But there's like squishy sounds and stuff when he puts his hand in this corpse. This corpse is 500 years old. There should be nothing wet in it at all. It should be just a skeleton.
Elliot. This is pausing in a universe with demons, okay? I can allow for a little bit of squishy corpse.
I'll suspend my disbelief about demons. It's hard for me to suspend my disbelief that, like, somehow this cellar chamber has the right conditions to preserve soft tissue. I'm sorry.
I mean,
they should be hanging salamis in there. That's what they should be doing.
There's a portal to hell, like, next door.
That's true. That's a good point.
That
keeps a lot of moisture in the atmosphere. Yeah.
As indicated, this is as video gamey as this movie gets, because it is like, we get the secret key out of the stomach, and then later on, like, they get like the book that has not only like Asmodeus's real name, but it has the handy map for demons in the world, I guess, who have been
all these sleeper cell demons.
So that's the premise, is that that when God cast the Lucifer and his buddies out, that there was 200 of them, and they spread out around the universe. The thing is, I'll accept wild bullshit if it's Warhammer-y stuff, but this church stuff, I don't really care.
What I loved about, just because I remember, I'm going to forget it at the end, they set up, there's all these demons on Earth, and the end of the movie is like, these two guys are going to go stopping demons one by one. And I was like, are they going to make 200 movies? Like, this would be amazing.
I mean, we can only hope.
One a year, like two a year at least. Yeah. So it's, it goes for 50 years. Hey, they can do it.
I mean, maybe this whole thing's a backdoor pilot for a TV show. Now, that's a little more realistic.
To be honest, actually, it does feel like a TV movie that's meant to be a pilot for a TV show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and man, I'm in. Yeah, who's going to produce it?
I'd watch that show
it?
For sure.
I feel like this fits with HBO's model.
I mean, HBO's model of don't have television, take all the things off of your streaming service.
Of moving Max's stuff over model. from Discovery to
So yeah, so they find
HBO's model of saying, "Remember HBO? Not anymore."
So they find this hidden chamber behind the wall that has like a liquidy portal to hell. There's a throne with an exorcist body on it. That exorcist has this dead body has a book that has Asmodeus's name and a map to all the demons. It also is like surrounded by like. There's like an Iron Maiden. There's Menhirs or whatever. Like
there's like
weird
a cult
stone
symbols.
Pillars.
I mean, they basically walked into a Mike Mignola comic. Like at this point.
Mm-hmm. That monkey's got a gun. So they
or Mignola. I can never know how to pronounce his last name. I've never heard
Mignola.
Michael Mignola. I'm making a Hellboy. I make a nice Hellboy for you. This is to be real good. Because you're such a good customer, I throw in some of BPRD. No, that's just an extra. You don't need to pay for that. Yeah.
So they now that armed with Asmodeus.
I was talking to Abe Sapien himself, Doug himself, and he was saying that anyway. So
armed with Asmodeus' true name, they're like, let's go exercise this fucking demon. So they go up there already. The demon's starting to possess everybody.
Isn't
like,
there
daughter
like
as well.
Literally a part where they, like, the two of them plus the family, like, walk in formation slowly towards the demon, too?
They do. Yeah, because they mean it for real great. This time. And is this around is it by now, has the Pope started having his attacks? Or no?
Yeah, I think you're right. The Pope has started having his attacks for a while. A lot of the times it would cut back to the Pope and he's like poring over ancient tomes.
All these redacted tomes.
And he's like, oh no, this is a terrible. It's great. I love it. It's so awesome. He's like he's like sweating on the pages. It's really great.
Somebody has scribbled all over the book. Oh no.
It's awesome.
They over-illuminated this manuscript.
You're supposed to put the pictures next to the words, not on top of the words. I can't read it all.
It's called a marginalia. This is super cool.
It's got a margin right in the name. What are you doing?
So the Pope like is reading these books and it's all redacted and he reads the your past sins will haunt you or something. And then he has an attack. And they have to take him to the hospital where he then vomits up a bunch of blood. And we're like, is that magic? What's going on here?
For the Pope's general practitioner to take a look at him and the Pope's internist to,
Yep. So, he's not doing so good.
It is very funny the part where the young cardinal is like, this is outrageous. And then the Pope just spews blood out of his mouth.
I love it.
I think it was at that point where I was like, okay, movie, I've got your full measure now. This is a goofy movie. Again, not the goofy movie.
I don't think
Goofy is possessed by Asmodeus in that. I won't know till we watch it for our goof movie spectacular that we do. But this movie does get sillier as it goes on.
So, so now we have the big showdown exorcism now that they have Asmodeus' name. And this is where the demon unleashes its full strength, sending Russell Crowe's character into sending him all kinds of visions. We also, what's the young priest's name? I want to say like Gabriel? No.
Yeah. Gabriel is the old priest's name.
Yeah. Oh. So it's like.
I'll look it up. Hold on.
Yeah, it's something. But. He starts sending him visions of a naked woman, which I was like, wow, this is pretty late in the movie to see a naked person. What is this, the devil's advocate?
It's like the parrot squawk in Citizen Kane. They're like, wake him up, wake the audience up, throw some boobs at him.
So, and then, so the daughter turns it.
Father Escabel, is that it? Yep. That's the other one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think
so. By Daniel Zavato.
Yep, so the daughter turns into like a crab lady or a spider lady and starts climbing all over the walls and she starts attacking her mother. The priest starts getting throttled by his own scarf and we're like, oh man, things are looking good for our heroes. So Father Amorth is like, you know what? There's only one option here. And he holds on to the child and he's like, come into me. So he takes the demon Asmodeus into himself. Thus freeing the child from possession. All the other demon stuff kind of stops, so everybody runs away, but like Father Amorth is like really holding on to it. He's like, oh man, get this cross out of my hands. Yeah. And this is where we get some serious Russell Crowe hamming it up. He's like full on demonizing. He's like throwing himself around. He's arching his back in ways that are challenging for an older actor.
Well, also the
camera's spinning around him while he stands in place. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, like, the reason that, like, the demon specifically wanted this guy was to be, like, a sleeper within the Catholic Church. And there was part of me, like, once Russell Crowe got, possessed, I was like, are we going to get one of those endings where it's, like, it seems like everything's okay.
And then the Russell Pope Crowe's, turns to the camera and he's got cat's eyes, like, at the
exactly. Like, or Russell Crowe's eyes gleam, you know, and you're like, mm-hmm. oh, no, he really was still possessed. But, you know, it's not that kind of movie.
No, it's the sillier option.
It is, yeah,
where everything turns out happy.
it's one of those. It was one of those demon exorcist movies that ends on an upbeat "fuck yeah, here we go" type note.
Yeah, guitar too much of that.
Yeah.
So he at one point he tries to hang himself, but it doesn't work because the demon ain't going out like that. So he drags himself down into the basement, and the other priest follows him. He wanders into the chamber with the pool to hell, mm-hmm. and a Virgin Mary type figure floats up out of the pool, and then morphs into the woman that he was unable to save, now like a totally demonified, and she attacks him.
That was a disappointment to me, because I was like, when the Virgin Mary showed up, I was like, if this movie goes all the way and has the Virgin Mary appear and save him at the end, then I'd be like, movie, you've got the courage of your convictions. Like, it's Catholic characters, go all the way. Just, like, do it. But they
Or
but
if
they
duke it out. That would, like, that the Virgin Mary is, like, punching the
devil.
The demon right out of him.
Uh-huh, yep.
Like, I feel like if I see a religious thing, I either want it to be
What do you think her fighting style is? Is she like a zoner? Is she a brawler? Is she like kind of like a Chun-Li, like Rebecca Ferguson?
That's what I'm imagining. Mary, a lot of kick flips.
A lot of kicks, like a Vega who's jumping around a lot. Yeah. I think Virgin Mary
is not
a
trap
flips.
Character. Yeah.
No, she's not going to like bear hug the devil and then like crush him like Zangief. She gets her
badass.
Hits in, she moves away. She gets her hits in, she moves away.
Yeah. Rush down. Yeah.
From different angles. Yeah. A lot of combos, a lot of super combos.
That's cool. That's a cool character.
That's
a pretty cool. I'd be terrible with her, but she sounds like a pretty
at the
cool
end,
character.
Like, she's like
an interesting addition to the roster. Yeah,
cradling her enemy's like head, like it's the baby, but then like that, like there's a moment of like sweetness, and then it gets crushed.
Yeah, Miracle Man style.
She's got a command grab. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I really, when I see a thing that's religious, I either want it to be not that religious because I don't believe in Catholicism, or I mean I believe it exists, but I'm not a follower of it. Or I want it to go all the way and be so totally religious. And so I kind of want to see now a movie that is out and out. Totally Catholic, believes all this, and the Virgin Mary shows up at the end and saves the day. You know, not in a superhero, not as we just talked about.
And obviously, I would also like it to bear, like, classic imagery where, like, the devils all are, like, a floating head with, like, goat's legs flying around it.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's got three mouths, and each one is chewing on a famous traitor. Yeah, of course, definitely.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great.
But it's all a trick. But then another lady comes out too.
Yeah.
Right?
So she attacks him, and then when the other priest arrives, now Russell Crowe is seated in the throne. At this point, you're like, oh no, is he completely lost? And so this is where the priest like tries to win Father Amorth back. He tries to win him back a little bit. Yeah. And in the process, that brings back the demon lady, and out from the Iron Maiden springs the blood-covered woman that he had slept with and betrayed.
His lover, who he wouldn't leave the priesthood for. Yeah.
Okay, and she's beating the shit out of him, okay? Mm-hmm. She's like chucking him around like she's folding him up like laundry. He's nothing.
And there is something really scary about being attacked by a naked person.
It's
they
terrifying.
Should seem more vulnerable, but they don't. And there's a video I'll always remember from, there was a naked man who was having some kind of a mental break on a subway platform. And people are around him, and it's like a lion is loose on the subway platform. Like, he's kind of, like, moving towards people, and they're jumping back. And it's just, and if he was in clothes, I don't think they'd be as scared. There's something about nudity that's going to be very scary.
That's way sadder than what I imagined when I laughed at the beginning of you saying there's a video. Like, a naked part, like, I was like, Elliot, no. At first, I thought you had seen some sort of, like, wrestling like, porn that, like, no, that's not.
No,
that's supposed to be scary.
This Street Fighter match is very weird. that was basically a Black Mirror episode, right? So we have two fights going on. We have Russell Crowe fighting one lady. We have the other priest fighting another lady. The other priest
There's nothing problematic, of course, about a movie where ultimate evil is represented by the only two women in the movie who are not a mother or a daughter, and they're covered in blood, which of course represents menstrual blood, the source of all evil. There's nothing problematic about that at all.
Funny you should say covered in blood, because the other priest takes out a magical priest coin and he presses it against the flesh of the demon lady fighting him, which bubbles, and then she immediately bursts like a blood balloon, covering him in blood, which caused me to cackle in the theater.
That was such a great moment. One, because it was like, oh, I guess it wasn't that difficult to get rid of her. You had your magic coin. I guess you can use it once. But also, the effect of her body bubbling up and then exploding was not what I was expecting from that moment.
Yes.
Well, and I like that it just happened. It didn't cut to him be like, and say something sassy like, sorry to burst your bubble or something.
Yeah, here's blood in your eye, you know, yeah. Uh-huh. It wasn't him going, Sancta Sangre, you know, or something like that. He just does it and she just explodes.
I was so caught up in it, I don't even remember how Russell Crowe beats the other one.
Well, they just toss the, I don't think oh, they just toss right. the coin over and it's a twofer.
Yeah, they like, just
they
use the coin.
They should have been using this coin from the beginning.
And he pushes her back and she falls into the
lake of lava. Yeah,
the lake of lava. Which is like 100%. I'm like, is Spawn gonna come out of this shit? Is like old timey Spawn movie effects?
No, yeah, it was like Virtuosity
effects.
it's real long Mormon stuff.
What was the movie with Jeff Goldblum?
Hideaway.
Yeah, it's like Hideaway effects. It's really great. Yeah.
And they're just shouting prayers until the demon sinks into the lava.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Exactly what I wanted from
because even though shouting prayers did not work earlier, it does work. Like, they didn't
works
shout
now.
At lava.
Well, shouting plus lava.
Yeah, plus lava. That's true. Maybe it's the lava. They're just taking credit for the lava at that point.
Yeah.
So now we get a little bit of wrap up. They head back to the Vatican. Now they're a team. They're like, hey, with all the information you gathered, here's a map of all the 199 other demons we have to defeat.
Yeah.
And they're like,
I got 199 problems and a demon is all of them.
Looks like.
Yeah, yep. And they're like, I guess, it's very much a like, hey, here's the next step on our adventure.
Like you got
let's
a new
go.
Job.
I think they literally say, let's get to work or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, but also it shows you the heart, where this movie's heart is, that the family that is being inflicted with all this trouble, they don't really get that much time ultimately. And they're just like, yeah, so the family went home and they're fine now. We don't even get to see a scene of them being healthy. It's just on to the priests. We don't care about those people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the next priest adventure? Rock music.
I mean, it should have ended with the two of them, two electric guitars riding twin Vespas through the streets of Rome onto their next adventure. That would have been an amazing
ending. Mean, the last shot should have been like a new possession and then all of a sudden two Vespas.
No, but the last shot was, in fact, it's like a still of Russell Crowe walking away or him walking away or whatever, and then they have like the text on screen saying the thing about like, you know, he went on to do this many more exorcisms or whatever, and I'm
until
like
until he died, yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute, what? You're telling me this is a real guy movie, and then like it's like immediately based on the books by Father, and I'm like, what?
Uh huh.
Liberally adapted, I would assume.
Yeah, I had trouble. I had trouble reading all that because the movie left me on such a high note. I was literally buzzing in my chair. It was amazing. Yeah. Well, so let's final judgments.
Yeah,
this
final judgments. This is a good bad movie, a bad movie, or movie you kind of like. I didn't even kind of like. I liked this movie. Like,
it's your favorite movie now.
Well, you know, it doesn't look. Nothing can reach the heights of Cats, but it has some of the same quality of like. I don't know whether it's good or it's bad. Like, its good qualities are inseparable from its quote-unquote bad qualities. Like, would I like a better, objectively, quote, better version of this movie as much as I like this version? probably not. And like, it's not like it's the most zany in terms of what happens in the movie, because in a lot of ways, like, it hits on very rote, like, plot points, but they are plot points of like three different types of movies that have been jammed together.
The movie definitely, it sets you up for a certain type of movie and then abruptly swerves to a different but related type of movie and then abruptly swerves again. And
exactly.
It kept me on my toes, not in a like, oh, who knows what's going to happen in this movie? So many twists and turns, but more a sense of like, where are you going, movie? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, do you even know? Are you driving blindfolded? And that turned into you get a giddy feeling after a certain extent.
Here's the metaphor I'll give. It's like if three different songs were playing at the same time, and yet, you know, that sort of cacophony, and yet that somehow was delightful because in the middle there was one man dancing to that music and he was doing the most beautiful dance.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about Russell Crowe's performance.
Crow.
The most beautiful dance. I mean, it certainly is a movie that gains so much from his how full, like, all in his performance is, and that he is not trying to, he knows what kind of movie this is, or at least he knows how to have fun with it, you know? And so he's at that level. It's
really highlighting how this kind of later career Russell Crowe, where he might not have the power to pull some like bigger movies. So he's doing these B movies, but he's bringing a really high level of energy between like this and Unhinged, which he's fucking great in.
I feel bad that I feel like I was harder on Poker Face than the movie that we did than I would have been if I knew he was saving all that energy for this movie. And that's why he was so like so down and so glum and lifeless in that he's like, gotta save it for the Pope's Exorcist. That's going to be the fun one, you know?
And I think also maybe some of my joy is like, this is a type of thing that used to be more common and isn't anymore, of just like a movie that's really unabashed in its schlockiness, but they have managed to afford one really good actor who's like, yeah, sure, I'll do it, you know?
And I'll say, I feel like the rest of the cast is also serving, especially the little kid. The little kid is great.
Yeah, I feel like nobody is bad in it. No one's
Franco Nero is perfect.
Nero is just like, it's such not the way you would expect the Pope to be played normally.
And it's
so fun. Like, this is also one, I think I'm going to put it more in kind of like territory because I don't want people to, I want to save my actual like for movies where I'm like fully on board. But I think you're right that like there's a good version of this, there's a quote unquote good version of this movie, a quality version of this movie that would not be as enjoyable and not as good as this. And we already have The Exorcist. Like we have an exorcism story told as well from a serious point of view as it's going to be done. So like, why not make your Exorcist movie like silly, you know?
Yes.
And not silly in the way, not silly like, what is it, dispossessed?
Repossessed.
Thank you. Repossessed, which is a bad version of a funny version of that.
Yes.
You know.
A movie that I was, as I was telling Dan last night, a movie that I mainly remember from the nude scenes. thumbs up. I'm going to say this is definitely a movie I liked.
The following pro wrestling contest is scheduled for one fall. Making their way to the ring from the Tights and Fights podcast are the baddest trio of audio, the hair to beware, Danielle Radford.
It really is great hair.
The Brit with a permit to hit, Lindsay Kell.
The queen is dead. Long live the queen.
And the fast-talking, fist-clocking Hal Upland.
See, I can wrestle and be an announcer.
Get ready for Tights and Fights.
Listen every Saturday or face the pain.
Find us on Maximum Fun. Now ring the bell.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening, and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Well, we have a couple of sponsors we should take a moment to thank and acknowledge. And the first one is Smalls. You know, cat food has been the same forever. I don't know if that's true, but it's here in the copy. Cat food has been the same forever.
Keep going. Keep undercutting the sponsor. Good job,
it's
Dan.
It's time for cat food to move into the 21st century. Well, you know, like back in the Middle Ages, you know, what you fed your cat was probably different than Purina. I mean,
no, Dan, cats have been eating the same Purina food since saber-toothed tigers were walking around.
I mean, colloquially, in the colloquial sense of forever, cat food, yeah, it's been the same forever. And that's why you've got to try Smalls. The protein-packed cat food made with preservative-free ingredients you'd find in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your door. Smalls works with leading cat nutritionists to create recipes that are exactly what your little furball craves and needs. And I've got two little furballs, so I'm twice as interested.
And two after cats. Making,
yeah.
Classic. You gonna be okay?
He's got two little furballs. And two cats. After making the switch to Smalls, 78% of cat owners reported their cats have shinier and softer fur, and 90% reported overall health improvements. That's a big deal. And you can try it risk-free. And if your cat won't eat their food, they'll refund you. So, yeah, it's nice to have, like, treats I can give to my cats without thinking, like, am I, you know, impeding their health by giving them a little something to like extra. I have some of these small treats. Small treats, it always feels good.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, they even work when I don't give them to them, but rather while I'm asleep, they fish the bag out of the cupboard and drag it out and tear into it.
What a couple of little rascals.
Muscles and Meatball, the Marinara brothers at it again.
So remember, higher quality ingredients mean a healthier and happier life for your kitty. So head to smalls.com/flop and use promo code flop at checkout for 50% off your first order plus free shipping. That's the best offer you'll find, but you'll have to use our code flop, FLOP, for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's promo code flop, 50% off your first order plus free shipping. I'm sorry that I undercut the copy earlier, you know, it was all that talk of Orson Welles. You know, I started thinking like him rewriting the green peas or whatever it was.
Yeah. You can't start a word with in.
Yeah.
You can't say a sentence with in. I'm also going to talk about our other sponsor today, and we're also sponsored by Babbel. Now, for most of us, learning a second language in high school or college was not exactly a high point in our academic careers. I talked about before, I took Spanish in high school, did very poorly. I took German in college, also didn't do great. It just, the way that language was being taught to me was not easy for me to comprehend and absorb. But now, thanks to Babbel, the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions, there's a fun and easy way to learn a new language. And I used Babbel. I used it to re-up my Spanish because I live in a part of the country where Spanish is very useful. And I have to say that I now feel more comfortable and confident using Spanish conversationally when I'm talking to people where Spanish is their first language. Am I totally fluent in it yet? No, not yet. But I can have a kind of basic conversation, and I can see the comfort in the faces of the people I'm talking to that I'm speaking their language and they can speak in the language they're more comfortable in. So it's been really great. It's been a really positive experience. Whether you'll be traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. The lessons are short. You can binge them or you can spread them out, and you'll be amazed how many you go through so quickly, like you're popping candy in your mouth, because they're just easy and fun to do. Other language learning apps use AI. Boo. This is going to haunt me in the future when AI runs the world, but boo. Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Up with people, down with AI. Let's reward meat flesh humans, and let's stop rewarding our future computer overlords.
But down with up with people.
But down with up with people, up with
down
people.
With AI.
Yeah.
Which Elliot means Alex Incorporated.
Yep, down with that show that was canceled years ago. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. I think, guys, I might go on to Italian. I was going to possibly do Polish, but after all this talk today, I think I might do Italian so I can make my cartoonish, offensive Italian accent that much more Authentic. Right now, get up to 55% off your subscription. That's a huge discount, more than half off. 55% off when you go to babbel.com/flop. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/flop. Babbel, Babbel.com/flop for up to 55% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life.
So let's go on to letters from listeners.
Let's do it. Why not?
Oh, wait, Dan, can I mention one more thing, actually?
Sorry. Sure, yeah, you can. You're allowed. Yeah.
Thank you. Before we go on, I'd just also like to mention that Housebroken, the Fox animated show that I've worked on for the past couple of years, has a new season. New episodes are airing on Fox on Sunday nights and also appearing on Hulu. Take a listen to it. Take a watch of it. It's really good and it's really funny. It's got an all-star cast. It's about animals that talk and have therapy together. I think you'll enjoy it. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Elliot. Letters from listeners. That's the thing we do, and we're going to do it now. This one's from Rachel, last name not withheld. You'll see the rest of the letter for the details on that one.
So it's not Rachel G. married, and the middle initial G is forgetting.
Mm-hmm. It's not that I can tell. So it starts like this. Dan mentioned in the recent episode, Your Place or Mine, that he'd like to see a film based on the book Arthur and George by Julian Barnes. I thought he'd like to know that there was a UK TV miniseries based on it. I haven't seen it, but I remember it was pretty well received at the time. Sidebar, I think I did say that I knew that it had been adapted, but just not as a movie. And I specifically wanted the story.
Good. Maybe. Take the satisfaction of having taught you a new thing away from our listener.
No. I appreciate, there are multiple people who told me about this. I appreciate it from everyone. I did see that when I was looking into it.
So this is you subtweeting, stop telling me about it to people.
No, I'm reading a letter that's going to get to a better point later on that we can talk about. Not
you
better.
Can just say thanks.
I thank you for.
So Dan, what else does the letter say?
I'm just reassuring everyone that I know that this exists. I haven't seen
our national nightmare is over. Dan is familiar with the adaptation. He hasn't watched it, but he knows it exists.
No.
Orange alert over. We no longer need to consider ourselves living under orange alert.
Next paragraph that is related, so I included the beginning setup, but anyway.
Excellent.
I realize that it's contrary to the tradition of the show to share last names, but I also thought Dan might like to know that there's a Flophouse listener whose last name is Sherlock. And what's more, I share an apartment with a friend of mine whose surname is Watson.
What?
Although we live in Dublin rather than London and we solve very few mysteries, we still get a lot of enjoyment out of the coincidence anyway.
They live at 221D Butcher Street.
And a Mrs. East River is there. I also wondered if you had any thoughts on the future of Sherlock Holmes in cinema. The Enola Holmes movies seem to be his current iteration, but are there any more avenues left unexplored? Has his reign as the most portrayed screen character left the well dry at this stage? Should he be left alone with his bees for a bit? Regards, Rachel, last name not withheld, Seba, for further details.
What's the deal with Enola Holmes? What's the deal there?
That's Millie Bobby Brown's series, and I say series, there's two of them.
Is it like Sherlock Holmes' sister or something?
Netflix
like that,
films. Yes, it's his sister who had previously been written out of the stories. She's very charming in them. She does a lot of talking to the audience, and the person who either wrote or directed them directed the Fleabag episodes. So like, it's got some of the talking to the audience has that same kind of breezy feel. Cool. They're fun. They're entertaining. Movies. I liked them.
Okay. So, but let's get back to the question then.
Yeah.
Of Sherlock Holmes.
Any long running character obviously needs to go to space.
Yeah.
As we learned
from
the
Leprechaun and Jason.
Sherlock Holmes hasn't gone to the hood either.
We've had a gender swapped punk rock 80s one from Guy Davis's Baker Street Comics.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So here's something. Oh, wait, sorry, Dan. What were you going to say?
Well, since we mentioned Sherlock Holmes in space, I was going to say, I guess the closest we got is when Data would dress up as Sherlock Holmes on the holodeck and have adventures.
I always thought that was kind of funny that they were like, hey, by the way, we're tired of doing Star Trek shows. We're going to do something else. This is a real idea that I've been trying to develop, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Dan, has there ever been a story where Moriarty is the hero and Sherlock Holmes is the bad guy? because I was thinking a while ago about something where Moriarty, rather than just being like a crime kingpin, he's portrayed that way, but that he is an anti-imperialist, and Sherlock Holmes is working for the government in order to shut him down. Where like Sherlock Holmes is a cat's paw of Imperial Britain, basically.
I can't think of a specific one, but I can almost assure you that that has happened.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's the problem with a character. Like, trying to find a new spin on that kind of a character is a challenge.
Well, okay, what if it's a kid and he's like Sherlock Holmes Jr.?
Mm-hmm. What if it's a doctor played by Hugh Laurie?
I feel like without putting a big spin on it, have there been a lot of, like, animated Sherlock Holmes? Like, maybe a traditional Sherlock Holmes story, but just an animated Sherlock Gnomes.
There's the great mouse detective.
I said traditional, twist on it. In that one, Sherlock Holmes, instead of being a man, was a gnome.
I mean, Basil of Baker Street is basically a mouse Sherlock Holmes, but again, not a traditional.
Yeah, like basically
it's a straight forward.
I mean, I'm amazed there wasn't a Saturday morning cartoon in the 80s or 90s that was like called like Sherlock Holmes 2079, where he's like, it's Sherlock Holmes in the future. Maybe there was. I know they did that with the Phantom. Maybe they did do that with Sherlock Holmes, actually. Let me take a look. I'm going to find out. Hold on.
Yeah, Google those exact numbers, too.
Oh, no. Portal to hell.
See if it... Well, Elliot's doing that.
There was an animated show called Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd Century. Okay, never mind. There goes that idea too. They've done everything.
Yeah.
Dan, has Sherlock Holmes ever investigated the Jack the Ripper murders? Because it feels like there's a possibility
Many.
Okay, well, what about Dracula?
Yeah.
Was he ever part of a character, like a league of characters who were extraordinary in some way?
Was he technically part of the league?
No, he wasn't. He's dead when he shows up in the flashbacks, but the idea is they think he's dead.
His shadow looms large in them.
Exactly, yeah.
His brother shows up. I don't
know, maybe he does need to take a break with his bees for a little bit. But the thing is, like, most...
Has Johnny Lee Miller ever played him?
It's such a strong character that most of the versions work in some way or another. That's the thing. Anyway,
he is a character who is so much stronger than most of the material he's in, including, in my opinion, many of the original stories. Like he's such a strong character that I'm sure he'll come back. I feel like he's right up there with like Frankenstein, where it's like, even if there's a string of bad ones, there's going to be a good one eventually because you can't put him down forever.
This next letter from Derek and Clara.
Wait, Dan, what if Sherlock Holmes was a fox and his sidekick was a mouse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dan.
Sorry, I don't know. Oh, it's Slylock Fox. That's, of course.
Mm-hmm. And Max Mouse.
give Max Mouse his props.
What if instead of Max Mouse, it was Dodgers star Max Muncy?
So yeah, this Dan. One is titled, this letter, that is titled Jumbotron Engagement. I never thought it would happen to me, but here I am almost a year and a half after paying for a Jumbotron proposal and finally writing back to say that she said yes.
Woo! Oh, good.
Admittedly, she said yes the day we listened to the episode back on, January 29th, 2022. But since then, we have said to ourselves weekly, we should really get back to them and tell them we got married. Well, 64 episodes later, here we are. So thank you very much for the assist and keep up the good work. Cheers, Derek and Clara.
Ugh. We did something, guys.
Thank you so much for writing it.
That was all us.
I've been on the edge of my seat ever since we first announced it. And now I can finally use the whole thing because I'm paying for the whole chair, but I'm just using the edge.
Yeah. Thank God.
Paid for by that lovely Jumbotron.
Treat your butt to a full seat.
Jennifer Convertibles, treat your butt to a full seat. Well, congratulations. We're so excited, and we hope that you're happy together.
Yeah, congratulations. So let's round out this episode in the traditional way by recommending movies. I'd like to recommend a little movie called The Pope's Exorcist, the film that has brought me the most joy recently. You know what? If you need something that's not The Pope's Exorcist,
there's no other movies.
I finally saw Dungeons & Dragons, which was also a lot of fun. But, you know, that doesn't need my help.
Obviously, the best part of that Dungeons... I don't know. It's not playing in that many theaters anymore.
You think it didn't...
I mean, I'm sure it did well. No, it's great. It's a lot of fun.
movies just don't last that long. I mean, Super Mario Brothers has been a huge movie, but even that is starting to leave theaters.
It's no Avatar 2. I think Dan's favorite part of the Dungeons and Dragons movie was the PSA beforehand, where they made the whole cast come out and tell us that we're the real heroes for going to the movies. And Hugh Grant looks so unhappy. I've never seen a man look less happy to be anywhere.
I literally just tweeted about how unhappy Michelle Rodriguez looks in that. Like,
go back, spin the tape back, Dan, and look at Hugh Grant's face. He looks like he is witnessing his children getting run over.
The whole thing is kind of a hostage video feel.
It shows you how much Nicole Kidman really loves the movies. She's genuinely delighted by how heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that was a fun movie. It was a blast.
Yeah. So recommendations from either of you or both?
Yeah, preferably. I'm going to recommend two fucking movies because they're both movies in a series. They are Korean films. They are directed by the guy who wrote the screenplay for I Saw the Devil. It is the first movie is called The Witch, Part One, The Subversion.
And a semicolon sequel, would have been a pretty baller move to use a semicolon.
It would have been crazy, right? These movies aren't that crazy. And then the sequel, of course, is The Witch Part Two, The Other One, which feels like they ran out of gas on that title, but that's okay.
Throw a semicolon in there. Get the juice
I mean, these are pretty straightforward like horror action movies about children who have been experimented on to be turned into like superpowered beings. And of course, some of those children get loose and then they have to send other superpowered beings after the young girl who is now grown up to being a superpowered teenager. And the movie kind of spins off from there, adding more superpowered people. And they're really violent and gory, and they're a little bit too long. But if you're looking for like a fun, gory action series, check them out. The Witch, Part One, The Subversion, and The Witch, Part Two, The Other One. And maybe they'll make a third one. They're setting it up.
The Witch, Part Three, Yet Another Witch. I would like to go, just like Dan was breaking all the rules by recommending the movie from this episode, I'm going to break a little bit of the rules. I'm going to recommend a short. This is not a full-length feature. This is a short movie.
Dan, check the rule book real quick.
Yeah, am I allowed to do that? Is there a rule against it?
There's nothing in the rule book that says you can't do it.
All right. I'm going to recommend, this is a movie that I am shocked that I was not aware of before. This is a movie called The Appointments of Dennis Jennings. This is the movie that Stephen Wright won an Academy Award for, which I was, for some reason, was not familiar with. It stars Stephen Wright, Rowan Atkinson, and Laurie Metcalf. So I'm like, what was this blind spot that I wasn't aware of this? Because I love all those people. And it feels like it's only a half hour long, and it really feels like it is a fictional movie version of essentially Stephen Wright's act in a lot of ways. And he delivers a lot of Stephen Wright jokes, and he plays a kind of like a paranoid guy who is has a girlfriend but is paranoid about losing her, and he has appointments with a psychiatrist played by Rowan Atkinson, who clearly openly hates him and does not like listening to him when he talks. And it's one of those things where watching it, I was like, oh, so that show Louie, in addition to being made by a creep, also ripped everything off, not just from Woody Allen, but from this short film. Like, it really feels like this is the proto version of that. But I really enjoyed it a lot. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Stephen Wright as a comedian, and it feels like you're watching his act in movie form. So that's The Appointments of Dennis Jennings. It's all up on YouTube. You just watch the whole thing. You don't even have to pay anything for it. I don't know if that's legal, but that's, you know what, man? Comedy wants to be free, possibly.
That's Elliot's life hack.
that's my life hack. Watch it on YouTube.
Okay. Well, you know what? This has been great. I really enjoyed going out to see a movie in the theater.
Yeah.
We always say, like, maybe we should do that more often. Maybe we should do it more often, especially because it gives Elliot an excuse to go see movies that maybe he wouldn't normally.
Just to get out of my house. Any excuse. I'd love to leave my house
more often. Look at the smile on his little face. Yeah, look at it's him. Amazing. He's
beaming. His smile is so big. It's amazing that it fits on my little face, my itty-bitty face.
That little doll's face. A Doll's Face by Henry Ibsen.
Yeah, Doll's Face. Yeah. And A Doll's Face Part 2 starring Laurie Metcalf. Yeah.
Huh? A Doll's Face 2, the subversion.
A Doll's Face 2, the other one.
Demonic
Wait, so there's another
toys.
Doll or the doll has another face?
That's and what you, I don't know.
And Ibsen is like, you gotta see the play. They'll find out. I'm Italian now.
Oh, cool.
We went down a little cul-de-sac there, but now we're turning to the highway.
Less a rabbit hole and more of a sinkhole, but yeah.
I'll say thanks for listening. Go over to MaximumFun.org to find other great podcasts on the Max Fun Podcasting Network. Thank you to Alex Smith. He is known as Howell Dottie on various socials. He produces and edits the show and does a lot of other great stuff. Check out his own work. Thank you for listening. For the Flophouse, I have been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
I've been Elliot Kalin.
Bye.
What? I hate it.
Hello?
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 Hello? I was quiet.
Is it me you've been waiting for?
Is it me you're looking for?
So, Dan,
let the bodies hit the floor.
That Peppa Peppa song? I think it might have come out before the Rod Stewart song.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm going to do some research on that and maybe blow that whole Rod Stewart situation wide open, stealing Halle's Brazilian song.
Mm-hmm. That was so funny when she just started doing that. I'm like, what is happening?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.